Hi, I'm Patrick Finley. It's Jason Leisure. Jason, coming up, we'll talk about what we've learned about Caleb Williams and the Bears through their first week or so of training camp. All that and more on Hallis Intrigue. Jason, as you and I sit here right now on a Friday afternoon, the Bears have put in a full week of training camp practices. They have one day of pads following the lead up that is mandated by the NFL. How are things looking at the risk of asking a very vague question?
I'll sharpen it a little for you, because anytime someone asks me how things are looking with the Bears, what they really mean is how's Caleb Williams looking.
Yep.
And it's just up and down. Mm-hmm. It's pretty normal for this part of the year for a rookie quarterback stepping in as the immediate starter. I'll give you two examples.
Okay.
So I think this was Tuesday. Mm-hmm. Two-minute drill. Both of these are from two-minute drills at the end of practice. Tuesday, Caleb Williams makes this pass that I just loved. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite passes he's made since he's been here. It's a submarine sidearm fastball that he threads through a crowd in the middle of the field to get from about the 20-yard line down to the 7. Mm-hmm. First and goal at the 7. I loved the pass. I thought that's what we've been hearing about with him. Four straight incompletions after that, they lose the drill.
Yep.
Today, the two-minute drill at the end of practice, at Friday, doesn't look great most of practice, kind of comes alive in the two-minute drill, has this great downfield pass 20 yards over the middle to Keenan Allen, another one of his best passes of the year, of the offseason, and then two plays later finishes it with recognizing either a blown coverage or some kind of lapse or just somebody not on it defensively. Tyler Scott wide open in the end zone behind Jaquan Brisker, 35-yard touchdown pass to mm-hmm. win the drill. So it's just that. It's just there has been no horrible Caleb Williams practice. There has been no amazing Caleb Williams practice. It's all been a mixed bag, and that is not a problem right now.
No.
If we were having the same conversation a year ago about Justin Fields 3 years in, and it looked like this, mm-hmm. that would be concerning, and it was.
It didn't look dissimilar to this, I'll tell you that. On that deep ball to Tyler Scott, David Overstreet, the Nichols coach, was screaming for 5 minutes afterwards that he had stepped out of bounds and come back in to catch it, as the play was developing. And he was accusing the officials of never having seen a football game before. So that's fun.
He was pretty hyped throughout practice. See, that's one thing. You have some coaches like that. When you go to first day in pads like they did on Friday, and there's a lot of pent-up frustration coming out, and it gets – today, Friday, it was chippy.
Yeah.
Just in the opening minutes of competition. You have some coaches like that are not really helping calm things down.
Missouri legend, by the way, David Overstreet. To your point, Caleb has made plays in this first week that few people walking the earth can make. And, I remember there was a sidearm throw, and then we saw Ryan Poles kind of 40 yards away trying to recreate the throw, mimicking, like, geez, did you see
and
it?
Laughing.
Yeah, it really looks like a shortstop, on a double play turn or something like that. And then, they're just basic. I know the Bears claim that the operation is better, and it is, but it's still not great.
It wasn't Friday.
I mean, there were consecutive false starts by Jatyre Carter that actually got Carter, I think, replaced during the drill. There have been just kind of getting in and out of the huddle issues that are very common this time of year. And you make a great point about Justin. When we were talking the last couple of years about, the effectiveness of the offense on a backfield with Justin, the standard for him is very different in year two and three than it is for Caleb Williams, who's never played in an NFL game before. And I think we all need to remember that, and I think the people at home need to remember that too, because they'll come out and they may see something great and they may see something inefficient, and that's okay at this time of year.
Yeah, when he says this time of year, we're recording this, it's still July. There's still so much time. There's still 6 weeks until the first game. There's so much time for Caleb Williams.
It's still going to be July 5 days from now. It's so early. Yeah,
I know. But I will say I went into this thinking, based off how he played at USC and based on watching every play of Justin Fields' NFL career, and practically every snap of his in practice that we were allowed, that the media was allowed to see, that he is going to be day one. Caleb Williams is going to be day one a better passer.
Yes.
Than Justin Fields. Yes. As a rookie with no experience, having never lined up against an NFL scheme and Khalil Mack and Joey Bosa and whoever else, he will be a better passer right out of the gate than Justin Fields. It's early, but I haven't seen anything that tells me I'm wrong about that.
At this time last year, there would be drills in which Justin would look at a receiver and all of us watching the drill would go, just under our breaths, throw it, throw the football. And he wouldn't. And that was maddening to watch. This has not been that quite yet. I think that Caleb is in a position where he can just be a pass-first point guard for a while, and they can win games, and they can be okay. The amount of talent he has around him, Keenan Allen, DJ Moore, Rome Odunze, Cole Kmet, Gerald Everett, DeAndre Swift, those are... He just needs to get the ball in their hand on time. Justin did not have that luxury. You know, I was talking to a fan.
He had some good personnel, though.
Okay.
There were guys. There wasn't this. You're right.
In his third season, he had C-plus personnel?
He had Kmet. He had DJ Moore. He had okay. Darnell Mooney. But it wasn't like this. This is no. much better.
No, and, you know, I was
talking... Go ahead.
I was talking to a fan today, and, they were saying, it just wasn't fair what happened to Justin. And you and I have talked about this for 9 months. It's true. We also need to get over that. The fact that it wasn't fair is beside the point. It stinks for him, and it stinks if you're a Justin Fields fan. But just because it wasn't fair didn't mean the Bears had any obligation to bring him back, and they didn't. I think that now Caleb is in a situation that is more than fair, that is maybe the softest landing and number one overall pick quarterback has ever had.
Yeah, I think it's unprecedented.
And what's, when we look at what we're, when we talk about what we expect and as we watch him during training camp, the bar is not, he does not need to be an A-plus quarterback out of the chute for the Bears to win games. And I would argue to you that Mitch and Justin, I'm not sure the Bears ever won a football game on a bad Justin Fields day. And after 2018, when the Bears defense got older and when Vic Fangio was gone, I think there were very few Mitch Trubisky bad days that were wins for the Bears. I think what's so intriguing about this season is Caleb can be just okay. Caleb could be bad. They might still be able to win games.
Yeah, I think that if you took this exact roster and you took Caleb Williams out and put Justin Fields in, if he's still here with everybody else the same, I think this is probably, in my opinion, and probably even in Vegas, a team that would be favored to be one of the bottom playoff seeds. Probably a wild card if you kept everything the same. So I think if Caleb Williams comes in and he has a choppy rookie season, that's where they're at.
What would this be with? What if Tyson Bagent were the starter? Do you think they'd be a playoff team?
I don't know. I just don't know about him. I know there was some excitement and optimism about him, but I haven't seen enough good from him to know that. I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think he's at Justin Fields level or even really that close quite yet.
Oh, okay.
But they would like him to be a viable backup this year, a guy that if Caleb Williams misses four games, can Tyson Bagent win two or three of them.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of see their floor as maybe the seventh seed. If Caleb Williams has a turbulent season, kind of up and down, choppy, difficult rookie season, they still are a 10-win team. They win some games where they score 17 points. They win 17-10, 17-14. Now, if Caleb Williams is more like C.J. Stroud, then they're a threat to go to the conference championship game. Where Caleb falls between those two ends of the spectrum for me is where they'll fall between 10 wins and having a shot at a conference championship.
Are you saying that the Bears are a 10-win team at worst?
Yeah, I think that's what I think.
Really?
Yeah, that's what I think.
Oh, okay. All right. I think 10 wins would require them to play well.
Well, they're going to play well. I'm saying if Caleb has an up and down season, I think they still can get to 10 wins. They've got a lot of talent.
Okay. Yeah, I would be closer to 8 probably if he's not great. But what's so interesting to me is that, he can be on the right projection by the end of the year, even if he didn't have a great rookie season. And they, even if they win between 8 and 10 games, my low and your low, that's still a pretty good season. If he's pointed the right way, and if they're a 500 team, and you can bring most of these guys back again next year, which is the case with everybody but Keenan Allen, probably, I still think that is pointed the right way, which is a unique feeling around here.
Yeah, if he's on his way up, it's going to make you feel better about everything.
Yep.
It's hard for me to reckon with the idea that they could be sub 500 or miss the playoffs and this would still be considered a good season.
I don't know. You go through the schedule and you count wins and losses. I mean, I think it's hard for me to get to 10 unless judging by what I see right now. I think Caleb would have to grow tremendously during the course of the season.
One thing that will have to happen is you'll have to have a dependable offensive line.
Yeah.
We feel great about the skill players. I think we agree on this, that they've got a great collection of skill players. You add DeAndre Swift just for the heck of it, pretty much, on top of a very talented group already. Tyler Scott has been excellent in training camp, and I still don't know that he'll necessarily get a lot of snaps.
Mm-hmm.
The offensive line, though, it's kind of in the middle. It's not a disaster.
Right.
But you also don't feel really secure in that.
Well, let's talk about...
Did not look good Friday.
Yeah, let's talk about what we have here. We have Tevin Jenkins, who, if history is any indication, will be hurt for part of the season. Nate Davis, who last year was inconsistent. We will all credit him that he was going through some pretty horrible stuff at the beginning of the year in his family, but still was not the player the Bears thought they were getting when they gave him a three-year, $30 million contract. Those are your guards. Braxton Jones at left tackle is fine.
He's a question mark.
Yeah.
It was on the table to replace him this offseason. Yeah.
I think Darnell Wright's one of the better right tackles in the league already. It could be even better. And then you go to center, and you have a battle between Ryan Bates and Coleman Shelton. The Bears are so unsure about that they're literally rotating every day. One guy starts one day, another guy starts the next. And, you know, Ryan Poles has sat there and Matt Eberflus has sat there and talked about how happy they are with the depth of their offensive line, that it's deeper than it's been in their 3 years. I don't think that necessarily means that the starting five is where it needs to be to protect the most valuable asset the franchise may have ever had in Caleb Williams.
Yeah, I think you nailed it. I think you're right. I mean, who on that offensive line would you say is just beyond being replaced?
Darnell Wright.
Yeah, and then nobody else.
Yeah.
You'd say just no. They have to keep this person. Mm-hmm. They couldn't or wouldn't be able to or whatever upgrade. But then you do say, okay, if Coleman Shelton is the starting center, which I would bet it would end up being the case, Ryan Bates is a great option at any of the three mm-hmm. interior positions. Mm-hmm. Larry Borum is a fine backup tackle to go to. I mean, they do have the depth, but they don't have that top line.
I think Matt Pryor's looked pretty good, too. He's somebody who can help either at guard or tackle. Yeah, they feel like they're one guy short. And, you know, we can talk about Tevin, and, you know, there are people around the league who love Tevin and people around the league who don't see it. The injuries aside, you know, if the Bears thought he was a for sure keeper, they wouldn't have told them what they told them, which is come back and talk to us about your contract extension during the bye week.
In October. That was pretty jarring, actually.
Yeah. I mean, and that's...
They don't even want to really talk about it until they get through half a season, practically.
Sure. And, you know, and I don't know whether this is them putting Tevin off because they don't want to tell him now, hey, we're not that interested. I don't know whether this is them trying to keep Tevin motivated, which is, hey, if you have a great, you know, first, you know, 6-7 weeks of the season, we'll reward you. But it's not the way you treat somebody who you think is going to be a cornerstone of your offensive line for the next 5 years.
O-line big picture, just at the start of training camp, Patrick, the pass rush for the Bears looked pretty good before they got into pads against this O-line. And we know it's not a stacked pass rush.
We also know that when you don't have pads on...
That's what I was about to say. Yeah, we also know that isn't very telling.
Right.
And so I've been eagerly waiting to see how does that line of scrimmage look once they get to full pads on Friday. It looked a lot the same. That defensive line was back there all day. And you're talking about some guys that are unproven or journeymen. You have Montez Sweat there, obviously. But the first day of pads, the pass rush looked pretty dominant against their offensive line, and no one thinks this is a dominant pass rush once the season starts.
Do you know who looked good? The kid from Kansas, the fifth round pick.
Booker?
Yeah. Yeah, Austin Booker, you know, I saw just win over and over again, rushing over the left end against the right tackle, second string right tackle for the most part. But, you know, he showed some flashes. I mean, the fact is...
Marcus Walker kicked butt today, too.
Yeah.
He was out there talking, but he earned it today. He was pretty good.
He's, you know, I still think they need one more defensive end, and they can kick Walker inside. Otherwise, I think you're relying on some guys who haven't proven that they can get after the quarterback when the games count. But, you know, at least on Friday, that D-line looked legit. And I think it's telling that you and I both saw the same thing, and we both thought, uh-oh, about the offensive line before we thought, oh, yeah, good for the D-line.
Exactly. Much more of an offensive line problem than to me, a sign of something changing on the defensive line.
Yeah, and this is also a team, by the way, that has, you know, between Cole Kmet and, Cole Kmet's one of the better blockers, you know, in the league.
Gerald Everett.
Yeah, Gerald Everett's okay. Big dog, definitely one of the best run blockers in the NFL. This is a team that I think is going to be able to run pretty well, but... You know, boy, you know, you just need to protect your quarterback who is, you know, who happens to be undersized. And there's, you know, it's probably not the topic we want to talk about. But, you know, he's going to be 6'1.5", you know, regardless of how good he is. You know, he's got huge legs and, you know, you think that he'll be durable. But, you know, it just makes you worry a little bit more than it does with Justin, who is just a, you know, just bigger and thicker all the way around.
And has a track record of getting just knocked around and
getting
withstanding it. Caleb Williams isn't going to be running a lot. He's going to be scrambling.
Yep.
But he's not going to be running a lot, I don't think. It's interesting, though, that you brought up the running game because and no matter who your rookie quarterback is, you're always thinking, let's get a running game going here. That's the easiest, that's the best way we can help this guy is if our running game is really good. And Khalil Herbert had a really nice practice today, had a lot of really nice plays. You got Swift, you got Herbert, you got Roschon Johnson, who is a guy that this administration drafted and loves. How do you see that running game playing out this year?
If you look at Shane Waldron over the years, there's a formula it feels like he tries to get to. In the last 2 years, at least, in Seattle, his lead back ran in each season 65% of the carries. The number two gets about 25-30, and then, you know, there's, you know, a little bit left over. The way I'm looking at it right now, Jason, is I think it's going to be DeAndre Swift 65% of the time. Let's say Khalil Herbert is your home run hitter. Maybe he touches the ball 8 times a game. You'll give him, you know, 30% of the snaps. And then Roschon Johnson's probably your third down back. He is by far the best pass blocker of the three. When we've seen him out there, typically it's been on obvious passing downs. So I think they will lean on him that way. A three-headed monster is not going to be that different than what they've done the last couple of years. But I don't think it will be as egalitarian as it was under Luke Getsy. I think it'll be Swift, twice as much as Herbert, and then Herbert twice as much as Roschon. And... You know, I really want to see what Roschon Johnson can do with steady work, but man, you don't go pay Swift what you paid him, and then not lean on him.
That chance will probably come eventually for Roschon Johnson, especially with a team that has been so high on him. There's been a lot of speculation, and I don't think any of it really credible at this point, but speculation online and in social media, whatever, that Khalil Herbert might not be here, that Khalil Herbert would be a trade target or a guy that could get cut. I don't see that at all. I don't necessarily see them keeping him here long term, giving him a contract, re-signing him in free agency or anything like that. Khalil Herbert, please don't make the mistake of thinking that he's not valuable. He is not necessarily a complete back because he's not a great blocker, although very willing. It's not an attitude thing with him. But Khalil Herbert is, as you described him, a home run hitter. That is a weapon. He's going to be here.
Also, name 5 complete backs in the NFL. Like, you know, the way the game is going, it is specialized. And people, you know, there are horses for courses. And, you know, when you say there was some talk online, you can also say that on the first or second day of practice, you and I were sitting there and I turned to you and said, is there any chance Herbert's not on the team this year? Like, I asked you.
Yeah, I said no. I said he'll be here.
Yes, you said no. And then we kind of, you know, talk it through. I think Travis Homer's a special teamer that's going to stay. I think Kari Blassingame if they decide they want to use a fullback enough, you have to keep him. He's really good. I mean, that gets you to five running backs on your roster, which is, you know, maybe one too many. I do think Herbert has the speed that Swift doesn't have, and I think there's a roster spot for him. But boy, if somebody came to you, Jason, said, like, here's a four next year, would you think about it?
If I'm a four?
Khalil Herbert's contract is up at the end of the year.
Yeah, I guess if you don't plan on keeping him, something like that would sound okay.
That'd be about right.
I don't know that that'll happen necessarily, though.
Yeah.
You might be able to go into the season with two quarterbacks on the 53-man and put Rippon on the practice squad. You might.
Are you telling me that Brett Rippon won't be gobbled up by somebody around the league,
yeah.
Jason?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's probably what will
happen. He's the old guy in the room, by the way. Can we talk about that for a minute?
Yeah.
Brett Rippon, how many career starts is the
four or something
veteran
crazy?
Presence in the room? So as many as Tyson Bagent, yeah. I think.
I do know this, that the Bears are spending, according to Spotrac?
I say Spotrac. I go long O on Spotrac.
I think only three teams.
Why do you look so upset? You asked.
Yeah, well.
I wasn't going to correct you, but you asked. I don't even know if I am correcting you. I might have it wrong.
I think the Bears are spending the fourth least amount of money on quarterbacks of any team in the NFL. That is by design. I wrote about this today. You know, the Russell Wilson style formula is, you know, you throw a lot of money at veterans if you believe in your rookie quarterback because he's only going to be cheap for so long. And that appears to be what the Bears are doing, not only at starter, but at backup.
Once you pay a quarterback that money, once you pay him 40 to 50 million to whatever, mm-hmm. It ends up being.
And that's what Jordan Love's going to get. Let's be clear about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And should.
Yeah.
Wouldn't someone else give it to him?
So, yeah.
Wouldn't the Vikings give it to him?
He's had half of one good season. Okay.
Once you are in that position at quarterback, you are having to make hard decisions everywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
You are having to get crafty. You are having to get guys to sign for less. One of the reasons Travis Kelce has stayed in Kansas City is because he's taken less. Not everyone willing to do that. Mm-hmm. You have to say, well, okay, we're going to have to – you're so good at – you're this kind of quarterback. You're a $50 million quarterback. You're going to have to go out and turn B-plus or practice squad-type guys into star wide receivers like Brady and Manning and Rodgers did over the years.
And Mahomes has done the last couple years.
Been doing where they just sign whoever's available or whoever somebody right. else is done with, given up on. They would have been in that position pretty soon, but with Justin Fields at quarterback, which is a lot different than trying to do that when you have Patrick Mahomes
yes.
at quarterback. Yeah. With Caleb Williams there, you don't have to think like that for 4 years.
Right, and it'll be really interesting to see, you know, when the Packers do pay Jordan Love, and it'll be any day now, and it'll be $50 million a year, probably on a shorter contract. Now, you know, you have these two rivals that have gone about team building really differently. And now those no-name receivers who have been really good for the Packers the last year have to stay that way until they get a contract and probably have to go somewhere else to go earn their fortune. You know, now you have staked, you know, a fifth of your salary cap, a sixth of your salary cap on Jordan Love being the guy that he was in the second half of the season. You know, the Bears have a little more wiggle room. But, you know, as I pointed out in the story I wrote, I think in the last 6 years, four quarterbacks on their rookie deal have played in Super Bowls. And they've all lost. And they've lost to Tom Brady, Patrick Mahomes, and Matthew Stafford. So it is good to have a quarterback on a rookie deal. It's better to have a quarterback. And
yeah, you'd like to have that problem.
Yes. Yes. It's, you know, and
you don't want is to be in that jam and you don't have the quarterback.
To be in the murky middle.
If you've overpaid, for example, if it turns out you've overpaid for Jordan Love,
mm-hmm.
or if the Jaguars have, you know, made a mistake committing like this to Trevor Lawrence, or if the Bears had gone down that path with Justin Fields, then I don't know what you do. Because those teams, whether you've got the quarterback or not, once you're paying that at quarterback, mm-hmm. you don't have the flexibility to bring in, oh, we'll just take Keenan Allen's $23 million pay, you know, salary cap hit this year.
And it's just the price of poker getting more expensive every year. You know, the per year leaders right now in salary among quarterbacks are Trevor Lawrence, because he signed his contract, you know, in the last few months.
What's his, 55?
Yeah, or 54.5, something like that. And Joe Burrow, who's much better than Trevor Lawrence and signed it 2 years ago. You know, by the time Caleb Williams is up for a new deal, we're going to be talking about contracts in the 70s probably per year. And boy, you know, the cap is going to go up with it, but boy, that's, you better be right at that point. And that is why the Justin Fields decision, I think, and you think too, from what I believe you think this. That's why it was always a pretty easy decision. Was the question wasn't bring him back another year. The question was, are you going to invest in him as a franchise quarterback? And unless you can say yes within, you know, a half second of being asked that question, he's not your guy.
And as Ryan Poles has pointed out, there's been a lot of good planning. There's been a lot of good restraint. There's been good roster building. There's also been very good luck that you get a draft pick from another team that you have no control over where it falls at just the right time, mm-hmm. both in terms of Justin Fields' timeline and in terms of a once every couple of years level prospect being available.
And Lovie Smith decides to win a football game, and that makes your draft pick more attractive to trade. Yeah, a lot of things had to go right for them. A lot of things were lucky. But here's one thing that wasn't, and then we'll get out of here, Jason. In their first year, the teardown year, I think they spent $93 million in dead cap space. Mm-hmm. They said, we are clearing the decks now. This is going to be painful, and we're going to stink. And they stunk for a year and a half as a result of it. But they got the hard part over with. And you know, you and I were talking about the Bulls walking in the other day. That's the sort of thing that the Bulls might want to consider doing.
Yeah, it was the problem for the Bears during the late Ryan Pace years.
Right.
Is not the unwillingness to see after 2019 that this wasn't headed anywhere and you needed to really change course.
It's really hard to do when you're afraid you're going to get fired, though.
It is. It's easier when you're Ryan Poles and you're probably laying this plan out in the interview process. Mm-hmm. I would say almost certainly laying this plan out in the interview process. So, you know, if you hire me, here's what I'm doing year one, by the way.
Yeah, and you got to give me 5 years to see this through.
Exactly.
Probably. Jason, the Bears have their first preseason game, anybody's first preseason game of the year, on Thursday in Canton, Ohio. We will be there, but we will be back in podcast form probably the day before that to preview the game. Until then, you can follow Jason and Mark Potash and myself on social media. Check us out on the Sun-Times website and in print or on the app on your phone. He's Jason Leisure. I'm Patrick Finley. Thanks so much for listening. We will be back again soon.